So something really weird happened to me today, Jimmy.
Okay.
I am on the website famousbirthdays.com.
Are you famous?
I'm listed at like 80,000 blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Like, I'm quite low down the list of famous birthdays, but people have apparently been searching
for me. You have joined
the
list, though, so...
Yeah, I'm on the
progress,
list.
Right.
And somebody... So it's got actually quite a detailed profile of me. It has... like my actual correct birthday, which was a little bit worrying, because I think that now they
so
can...
So if anyone wants to steal your identity, they now can go to this
yep,
website.
Can totally
and,
do
yeah,
it. Fine,
okay.
No problem. And they have a couple of jobs that I used to do. So they have that I used to work at Bite the Ballot and all of that kind of stuff. And they have that I also run a podcast called The Right Dishonourable.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So the podcast is on there.
So you're inching,
some poor
you're inching
sod.
Towards Wikipedia page status then.
I mean, I'm pretty much there, I feel. I think that famousbirthdays.com is the new Wikipedia.
It's the gateway to Wikipedia.
Precisely. And the fact that The Right Dishonourable is on there has made me really, really happy. Like some poor sod has had to research me. A couple of people have searched for Jazza John.
Either that, or they've created an algorithm that, you know, can just pull data and, you know, which is more impressive.
Either, which is more impressive than somebody having to research. But anyway, The Right Dishonourable is now famous. So
it's now internet
you're
famous.
Now, yeah, you're now listening to internet royalty. Hi. Hi, my name's Jazza.
My name's Jimmy.
And this is The Right Dishonourable podcast, where we talk about current events and social issues and the like. We're not qualified in any particular way.
You
we're
still
just men with
you
opinions.
You still haven't come up with a third thing to add to that list.
I'm sorry. I was taught in GCSE English that you had to
do
the rule of three.
Yeah.
I'll work on that
you
for next
do,
time.
Yes.
I won't.
So, what are we talking about in this week's podcast?
So, this week's podcast, oh my god, so I stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning and watched the first Republican primary debate.
Did you stay up for the general election as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did pass out around like 5.
You're just a full-blown nutter then.
I'm like, I need a life quite desperately.
I went to bed, like, both times.
I want to live tweet everything. That was my main reasoning
That's
for doing
enough.
It. But we're basically Donald Trump, surprise, surprise, our favourite contender.
I thought he didn't dominate events as much as
He wasn't really allowed to.
Which is a bit of a shame, though, from a television perspective.
It is. From entertainment. But we're going to be talking about some of the fallout from those from that particular podcast and what's happened since. Secondly, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to be talking about Kids Company, which went into meltdown this week after...
Yep.
Several years of problems that were gradually sort of brought up through whistleblowers and so on.
And what's the name of their CEO, Jimmy?
Her name is Camille Batman-Gellich.
Yes, that's
I actually got her name right. We were discussing before the podcast how to pronounce her name, and I think I've got it correct.
It's Batman-Gellich. So kind of like get rich, but you slur it.
Get rich, which in some ways is appropriate as we'll find out later on. And for the third topic, I've now put away my phone, so I can't remember what it is. Awkward.
We're going to be... So today marks the 70th anniversary of the Nagasaki bomb, which was the second bomb to be dropped on Japan by the United States of America after Hiroshima. And this was actually suggested to us
by Stride and Saunter on Twitter.
Which, by the way, so whatever your real name is, Stride and Saunter.
Can you send when you make suggestions in future, all people, can you send us your real name?
No. Like, Stride and Saunter, fine, but also slightly pretentious. We do like you, though.
We do.
So thank
do
you
like
for engaging.
You. Yeah, why would you just call a viewer pretentious? He's not going to listen anymore. He's going to hate us.
I mean, my internet name is rhyming with oranges. I shouldn't really throw any shade, should I?
That's true, yes.
Shall we get on with this?
We probably should,
okay.
Yes. Okay, so on Thursday night / Friday morning for us, the Republicans got in, had their first debate for the primary election, basically choosing who will run against probably Hillary Clinton in the US presidential election in 2016.
This is the first in like many, many primaries, though. So like the first vote isn't going to be cast until like later on this year, and they're going to have at least one Republican debate a month. And then one every 2 weeks in 2016. So there's going to be plenty of these if you missed it, don't worry.
Right, and basically, before this happened, everyone was expecting Donald Trump, the businessman and star of Celebrity Apprentice in the US, yeah, to completely dominate events with his craziness. And he did somewhat dominate events, didn't he?
At the very beginning, he just went loco off the bat.
Okay, so almost the very first question, the moderators, this was run by Fox News, by the way, asked all of the panel, actually, but this question was blatantly directed towards him, asked all of the candidates who they would support if they weren't elected on the Republican ticket
themselves.
It was
basically, would they support the person who won the Republican ticket,
yes,
the Republican nomination, if it weren't them?
Yeah.
And basically nobody but Mum said that they would not support them apart from Donald Trump, who put his hand up and then just went, shrugs.
Because the thing about Trump is that he's actually got enough money to run as an independent candidate in the style of, who was that guy from the 92 election?
Oh, don't make me remember his
name.
Is
it Ross something?
I can't remember.
But anyway,
don't make me Google him.
The problem with Trump running on his own as an independent would be that it would obviously split the Republican vote.
Yeah, because he pretty much exclusively appeals to Republicans.
Yes, it would guarantee a Hillary Clinton victory, mm-hmm, assuming that she actually wins the Democratic nomination. But
we can still feel the burn.
Oh God.
It's that, like DabCam.
That was a reference to Bernie Sanders, who's the guy who's not going to win the Democratic nomination. But Jazza, overall, you watched the whole debate, you were live tweeting. What was your impression about the first Republican primary debate?
Well, it wasn't really... So, we both wrote pieces on this separately. And my initial one was, this isn't a debate, this is a series of single-question interviews to a selection of the candidates.
There was a bit of debate, wasn't there? There was a bit of back and forth between uncertain issues.
So everybody kind of steered clear from Donald Trump as much as possible, with two very specific exceptions. On the one end, it was Jeb Bush, who was kind of weirdly being very chummy and best friends, and the two of them kind of had a mutual respect to and fro at one point, and specifically about illegal immigration. They were very amiable with each other, which is only going to make both of them look good. And then it was Rand Paul, who was the one who decided to... who's the Libertarian candidate, who decided to basically go all guns blazing, no pun intended, Republicans, to kind of attack Donald Trump right off the bat, off of the very first question. And it was... I feel like Rand Paul kind of crashed and burned a little bit because he was seen as very, very combative.
See, I like Rand Paul on certain policies because he's strong on the anti-NSA like mass surveillance thing, and he's probably the only Republican who's actually really opposed to that sort of thing. On a lot of other issues, he's very questionable. I mean, one of the things that struck me is how much of a problem abortion is in, the Republican circles, how much opposition there is to it.
I mean, so much of it is about how many weeks and, whether there is... And the fact that you can't even oppose abortion through rape and incest is just an insane thing.
But
it's kind of like a non-issue as well, because abortion rights are protected in Roe v. Wade. Mm. And in terms of what the president can do, the president can change very little in terms of abortion across the country, because any changes will have to happen on a state level. So, for example, you see Texas defunding stuff like Planned Parenthood, who are particularly controversial at the moment because they're apparently selling baby organs.
Sure.
Orcs. but so in terms of what the president thinks of abortion rights, it's not really relevant to anything.
So of all the candidates, obviously, as I think we both said in our pieces, if you live in Britain, Americans are just way to the right on issues such as abortions, gun control, etc.
Yeah.
But of the Republican candidates, who did you like the most?
So I kind of got... I said this on Twitter while I was live tweeting, hashtag GOP debate. And I was particularly impressed by Marco Rubio, who is a first-term senator from Florida. And then all of my friends from Florida very quickly said, no, he's terrible, no, 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 no. But he was incredibly articulate, very measured, though he did have kind of like a bad habit of smiling at himself every time he got a little bit of applause. He was like, yeah, I said that. And he does, compared to like all of the others who are like in their 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. He looks like a teenager. He looks like he's just graduated from like his master's degree in political economics.
He's the one that looks like a sort of slightly greasy Wall Street banker.
Does he? Maybe.
I think so. Didn't he have slick back hair? This is
maybe... No. He had quite puffy hair.
I'm not thinking of the right person.
But he's
then.
One of the two Cuban American candidates who are looking for the Republican nomination. Being Ted Cruz.
I'm probably thinking of Ted Cruz actually. Yeah.
I think that there were so Marco Rubio stood out particularly.
Is it John Kasich is the guy?
John Kasich, yeah.
And he's from Ohio. Is he the governor or the senator or something?
He is the governor.
Right. I actually thought he was probably one of the more impressive ones from my point of view.
I feel like he was impressive because he was particularly different. When he was asked about gay marriage, he said that he'd recently been to a gay wedding and that he would support a hypothetical gay child, which is like big news to the rest of the Republican candidates who are very much like, oh no, gays.
See, I think, to be fair, Rand Paul said something. He didn't say I support gay
he
marriage,
just wants
but he
the
sort
government
of said,
out of marriage.
I don't give a shit, basically.
Yeah, essentially. Like that's the great thing about being a libertarian. You can just be like, do what you want. A couple of people who were particularly... like Ben Carson, who is the surgeon... and the only non-white candidate, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are Latino, but the only black candidate running, he, on both sides, I think, actually, he was just really cute and shouldn't be running for office. He was just really, really lovely. At the very end, when he had to sum up why people should be, voting for him and supporting him, he said something along the lines of, let me give you the reasons why I'm different. I'm the only person here to have done surgery on Siamese twins. I'm the only one to have done open brain surgery.
So he's a neurosurgeon. He was the first person to separate conjoined twins at the head. But actually,
he was just really sweet.
But he said something like towards the end when they were questioning about what was enhanced interrogation techniques, which is the American word for torture.
Torture, yeah.
And he was saying, I don't think we can fight a politically correct war. I don't think that's like a salient concept. And as I said in my piece, like, it's not politically correct, I don't think, to say we maybe shouldn't torture prisoners of war.
Yeah, you know? it's a very strong kind of opinion in the US that torture has actually worked, even though it doesn't really work. One of the standout things for Ben Carson specifically was when he was asked about race. And he said, oh, I'm used to working as a neurosurgeon. Everybody for me is just synapses or something along those lines. And it was like, oh, you had a real chance to kind of like make a point about like race and the big problems that are happening in America at the moment. And I don't believe that he actually thinks that.
Well, that was actually my impression of the candidates overall, is I don't feel that the Republicans really had... None of them had any new big ideas of how to actually solve the country's problems with inequality and with race, as you say. There didn't seem to be any innovative thinkers among the Republican candidacy at the moment.
I don't know. I think you could put somebody like Rand Paul in that bracket.
I guess, but Rand Paul's sort of quite ideologically driven. He's not pragmatically driven. He's got a view of the world. As I said, of the candidates, I probably like him one of the most because... of his view on mass surveillance, and I have some sympathy for the libertarian platform in general, but aside from him, maybe there doesn't seem to be anyone who says, I've got a vision for how America should be, follow me. It's all just seems to be tussling at the moment.
Donald Trump seemed to have a particular he wants to build a wall between the US and Mexico, make Mexico pay for it, and have a beautiful door in the middle, which was a very interesting point where, are you talking about a metaphorical wall and a metaphorical door? Or is the wall physical and the door metaphorical? Or are you talking about actually having a physical door there? I found that whole exchange really confusing. To which I think like there need to be designs starting to be submitted for this beautiful door that is going to only attract people.
Surely
the
people
persuasion.
Would just start sailing around the edge of the wall. No.
Or just like paddle out.
Well, yeah, you know, like, is that not possible? Or are they going to start, like, building a wall around the entire coastline of the United States as well?
I think you've just exposed the biggest flaw in the wall argument ever. Congratulations. We should probably also talk about the fact that our Trumpy Trumpy McTrumpington.
The Trumpster.
The Trumpmeister. He has gotten into some hot water in the last couple of days post this debate because of stuff that he has said with regards to one of the Fox moderators, Megyn Kelly.
Megyn Kelly, yeah.
Who, by the way, is probably the most beautiful news anchor on the face of the planet.
Well, there's actually photos of her. She did a shoot for GQ. And
of course
like
she did.
Like a fairly raunchy shoot for GQ where, you know, she...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the word would be. Exposed herself, should
lovely,
we say.
Lovely.
But not in that sense. But what exactly did Trump say after the
So we should probably... The first question that Megyn Kelly asked, specifically to Trump, was, you've said all of these horrible things about women in the past on your social media and in public. So he's said that breastfeeding in public is disgusting. He's called Rosie O'Donnell a pig and an animal and
a slob.
So
who is Rosie O'Donnell?
Rosie O'Donnell is a TV personality, like comedian, actress on like US television.
Sure.
And is also a lesbian and is round.
Fat.
Voluptuous. She is let's not use the F word. Let's use voluptuous. So she's particularly voluptuous and reasonably left-leaning. Donald Trump kind of has laid into her a couple of times over the years.
So do you think Trump has a genuine problem with women, or is that just...
I mean,
him disliking her and being like, okay, I'm just going to bring in some sexist language.
So I think that was part of it, but also he stormed out of a meeting when a woman asked for a recess so that she could pump her breast milk. Which
okay.
is just a thing that... Would you rather she started spewing all over you, Trump? Like, it's just a physical thing that needs
I don't
to
understand, like... So, there's been loads of stories about breastfeeding and, like, how some people think it's a major problem. And I just don't understand, like, the non-scandal of, like, breastfeeding.
It is very, very confusing. So, when this question was posed to Trump, he said... Well, it was mainly against Rosie O'Donnell, and the examples that Megan gave were particularly skewed to what most
sure.
of them were stuff that he said to Rosie O'Donnell. But and I have to work with women, etc., etc. And then at the end of it, he said, "I've been very nice to you, Megyn Kelly. Maybe I should stop being so nice to you."
Yeah.
To which he was like, "Ooh, ominous."
Well, he also said something about, like, the media are picking on me and they're, like,
was,
you know, attacking
was,
me or whatever.
Literally, he gave her a threat. And then the next day he says, oh, she was just very angry at me. There was blood coming out of her eyes. There was blood coming out of her, .. wherever.
And he also retweeted something from one of his followers calling her a bimbo as well.
Excellent, fantastic. Yeah. I think it was more the menstruation comments that have landed him in
well,
hot water.
It's of a
and
theme,
he was banned,
right?
He was banned from a Republican event that was happening over the weekend because of his comments about Megyn Kelly menstruating.
But Trump is quite similar to Nigel Farage, the UKIP
party. Nigel Farage rhymes with garage.
Farage, garage, Farage,
yeah.
Garage.
Yeah.
In that when he says controversial stuff, the media, who are generally a bit more highbrow and educated,
mm-hmm.
are like, oh my God. But it doesn't actually seem to have too much effect on their popularity,
so
right?
The media does seem to have, like, gone a bit batshit crazy over it, as it enjoys to. But they did a very similar thing when he said that John McCain wasn't a war hero. See our episode a couple of...
he said a lot of crazy things.
And also the calling all Mexicans rapists and all that kind of stuff.
Now he said, and I'm sure some of them are good people.
Great, fantastic.
So that's okay.
Oh, in which case, no racism there. And Megyn Kelly is an interesting one because, like John McCain, she is a darling of the right. She's got a very popular show on Fox, is incredibly attractive and is very popular with politicians. Everybody goes on her show. And it will be very interesting to see if this particular kind of attack on women, like saying, oh, she was just angry at me because she was on her period, is just not...
It's like sort of adolescent
thing.
Banter.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. And so if he continues to say this kind of stuff, we are going to end up seeing him banned from more Republican events, I think, which could push him into being
an
independent candidate.
Will it dent his support all that much?
I don't
know.
I don't think it will. But I think that it's going to mean that the Republicans push him out.
I mean,
because if they have him as a front runner saying that kind of stuff and becoming ever more popular, they are just not going to get anywhere near winning.
But it, you know, it sort of fuels his whole narrative of like, oh, I'm just saying it how it is, and you know, the Washington cartel, you know, they don't understand normal
they call
people.
It a cartel, don't you?
It is a bit of a cartel, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Westminster Village of America.
Yeah, but the Westminster Village sounds quite quaint. The cartel sounds like House of Cards.
I think it is a little bit like House of Cards, you know. Minus... Spoiler alert, by the way.
Spoiler alert, beginning of season two. So,
I mean, it's like 2 or 3 years ago, like, catch up on that shit, come on.
Yeah, exactly. If you were ever... Yeah, but whatever.
Anyway.
Do you think that Trump is going to... Because he did say, when at the beginning of the debate, that he wanted to run as a Republican. Do you think that that's bullshit and he actually is going to end up being forced to run as an Indy? I kind of want him to run as an Indy. It would shake shit up, and that's what American politics needs.
It would, but I don't think it would in a particularly productive way, because the Democrats would think, oh, we've got this sewn up, and the Republicans would think, oh, we just can't win now.
The Democrats already think that they have it sewn up. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
But at least if somebody Jeb Bush was on the Republican ticket, yeah, and Trump wasn't running as an independent, they would at least have a chance. The Republicans would have a chance of winning.
Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton is going to be the most boring race, like head to head.
You say that American political dynasties face off again.
Like, it's so dull. So what's really interesting, I need to mention this before we wrap this up, there was the secondary debate that everybody's kind of been ignoring.
Did you watch the secondary debate?
I've seen clips.
So we're perfectly informed to comment on this.
Well, very well informed. And it, Carly Fiorina, who is the ex-CEO of
HP.
Packard, yes. Yeah. Also known as HP. Well,
it is known as HP. That's his name.
Hewlett-Packard. Yeah. She was widely touted as being the winner of that debate and the head and shoulders winner of that debate. Carly Fiorina is going to be a fantastic option for a vice presidential candidate. She wouldn't be able to run on her own, but I reckon if any of them have the smarts, and whoever gets the ticket should have Carly Fiorina as their vice president.
It's worth saying that Fiorina in the past lost her job at HP after she fucked the company up.
I feel like she's really... I really like Carly Fiorina.
But yeah, but her record in terms of actually managing stuff is not great, you know.
I'm not going to start touting Carly Fiorina's record, but she basically did what had to be done in a time where the dot-com bubble burst, had to cut a load of jobs, and then made HP start diversing, and has turned HP into a broad technology company.
That's a pretty generous interpretation.
I think she's very cool.
All right, well, on that note, if you've watched the Republican debates, do you have any opinions on who should win, who won that particular debate? You know, is Trump going to lose support over the next couple of months as he says ever more controversial things?
Do you think that Carly Fiorina is a shoo-in for vice president? And do you think that my piece on the debate was better than Jimmy's? You can check both of those out on rightdishonourable.com.
I mean, I did edit your piece and make it worse than mine, so...
Oh, shit.
You know, deliberately.
Bollocks. Yeah. Camilla Batman-Gelich, who is the now former, awkward, CEO of Kids Company, which was kind of like the go-to kids poverty charity, has now had to step down from her role. Kids Company
that is no role anymore.
Yeah, yeah. The company has kind of been liquid. The charity has been liquidated. I don't know what the actual term is.
They've paid off their staff for July, and they ran out of money, and now everyone's lost their job.
Yeah.
And the government is calling in local services to pick up the slack. I'm sure it will be very easy with the money they're giving to them.
Yeah. And it's all just kind of happened incredibly quickly and very awkwardly. A couple of weeks ago, BuzzFeed and Newsnight exposed the fact that there were major oversights in terms of talks about abuse, and this not being reported to the police within kind of Kids Company, and then all of the financial shit kind of hit the fan. They realised that they had no money, even though they'd just been given £3 million from the government, and then they used all of that money to pay off their staff, which they weren't meant to do. It was all incredibly awkward. Jimmy, what the fuck's happened?
Well, basically, if you believe the reports, the FT wrote a report recently where they quoted a minister in the government who said that it's actually been pretty common over the years for Kids Company to be running out of money and then to go to the government and say, we need a cash injection now, and the government will just hand over the money.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason for this is that David Cameron saw Kids Company as part of his big society vision. So the Kids Company within the last year were given two grants, effectively, a 4.3 million one before the general election and a 3 million one within the last month. And the 4.3 million one was partly because they were afraid it was going to shut down and there would be negative publicity for the Conservatives leading up to a general election.
And the Big Society.
And the Big Society mm-hmm. idea. Although Cameron doesn't actually talk about the Big Society idea too much. But within, again, if you believe the reports, within the government and within the civil service, it's been widely known that Kids Company has not been very well run for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
The allegations about sexual abuse are quite recent, but the allegations about financial mismanagement are actually quite... they've been around for quite a long time.
Mm.
And it's partly because, I think, that Batman Gelich kind of views... She wants to help as many people as possible, and she knows that she has that backing from government, so she just keeps giving out more and more money.
So you're being very generous, I think. So the way that I've kind of interpreted it is Batman Gelich has basically guilt-tripped ministers and people in power to either endorse her charity or to give her charity money. So, for example, when all of this... the day that Kids Company kind of collapsed, she was on the Today programme on Radio 4, where she recounted a story and she said that I was on the phone... I had this morning... So at like it would have been at 6 a.m. Mm. This morning I was having to talk a kid off of jumping into the path of a train.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, if you recount that kind of story every time you need some money, then yeah, you're going to be fine. But one of the biggest problems...
But from the other point of view, it has suited the government to actually continue to give her money.
Yeah.
There's blame on both sides of the equation here.
But there's been a lot of... criticisms of Kids Company because they find it very difficult to quantify the amount of good that they do. They say that they do, we've helped this many people, but when you ask for more detail in terms of how they've helped them and like quantifiable results, it makes it very difficult.
In 2011, they reported that they'd helped 36,000 people, 36,000 mm-hmm. kids and their families. And yet, actually, within their 2013 report, the number of people they could account for that they'd helped was only 750. If you look into the actual yeah. details. And part of the reason for this is that they had a very lax attitude to spending money. So they were allegedly buying kids designer clothes. They were paying for them to go abroad rather than just providing their kind of core remit, which was to just give the kids a safe place to go
yeah.
and helping families that had run out of money, like feeding kids and feeding the families as mm-hmm. well. And apparently they were even just giving out packets of cash to kids, at least one kid that was interviewed by the BBC and the recording was played in that interview on the Today Show that you were just talking about, where the kid said that they took the money, then went and bought drugs.
Yeah.
And then even went back to some of the Kids Company venues and actually even smoked weed and things like that on the premises.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my impression is Batman, as happens quite a lot in the third sector, in the charity sector, there were very good intentions on the part of Kids Company, but they had no understanding of how to build a sustainable charity.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually no desire to build a sustainable charity because she, like Batman Gelich, just seemed to assume that the money would keep coming.
So having worked in the third sector before, I think you see this kind of failure on charities' parts quite a lot. You see very well-intentioned individuals that are kind of... And it is usually like a charity built around an individual and their drive.
Mm.
And then like a lack of expertise in terms of how to run a functioning like financial body that isn't just going to piss all of the money up the wall.
Mm.
And you see kind of like the opposite of these in the form of places of organisations like Save the Children, Oxfam, Christian Aid, for example. There is no single face of those charities, and I think that that is important because when people fuck up or if they aren't particularly good at their job, they get rotated out and somebody else gets brought in order to run the charity in a particularly good way.
Mm.
Whereas when it's kind of run by, I don't want to say ego, but when it's run by an individual's drive, they kind of are able, and particularly very charismatic individuals, they are then able to kind of guilt trip and convince those in power to be able to help them out in their cause, because their causes are so admirable. That's one of the reasons.
Well, something that you also find out with the kids' company thing is a journalist from The Spectator called Miles Goslitz, who actually was one of the original journalists who was actually investigating this and reported on it in The Spectator back in February. He managed to get hold of some of the internal emails from kids' company and then put the emails up on The Spectator's website. You can go and read them if you like. And it becomes very obvious that Batman Gelich was entirely immune to criticism. She just dismissed it as, you know, journalists out to get me sort of thing. Just very standard things that people always say whenever they receive scrutiny from the press. And it has become obvious that...
We should probably say Jimmy is a journalist and therefore biased.
Well, yeah, I'm a bit biased, but, you know, there are always reports of, you know, media witch hunt, we've suffered a trial by media. Yeah. There is no such thing as a trial by media. You can be criticised by the media, but ultimately the media has no power to put you in jail, which is really the important fact about a trial when it comes down to it. But, yeah, it's obviously not very well run, and it has collapsed basically because of her. Even though all of the good that it has done over the years, and I'm sure it has done quite a lot of good for a lot of people, was also down to her. But as you say, if you run a charity, you have to be aware, you know, it has to be sustainable. There has to be oversight. You have to actually test what it is you're doing. You can't just piss money up the wall for two decades, which does seem to have been somewhat what's happened here.
Do you think that this looks particularly bad for Cameron and his kind of idea for a big society? Though big society has kind of been dropped as an idea, there were loads and loads of photos of him and Batman Gelich having tea and having a lovely time together and saying it's great to see you again, and all of those kind of like they were clearly very chummy. Do you think that this is damaging to Cameron or the Conservatives or his cause in any way?
I think it raises very serious questions about the Conservative idea of slashing down the state. Either they have to increase scrutiny and increase oversight on charities, particularly when they're receiving public money. I think over the last decade, kids' companies received £37 million of taxpayers' money. That's either the last decade or since it was founded. It's a 20-year-old charity, or 19 years old this year. But it's received a lot of public money, basically. So there really has to be more scrutiny, or you have to bring those functions back inside the public sector.
Well, because that's what's kind of going to end up happening now that Kids Company has no longer exists.
Yes.
It's now all of the responsibilities that Kids Company had to deal with have now been passed on to local government and local councils.
Yes.
Haven't they? And the fact that they are currently under an awful lot of cuts. I live in Newham, and Newham is now going to get £50 million worth of cuts, and they are consulting the population as to how they want those cuts to fall. It's going to be very difficult for those local public bodies to pick up the slack, no?
Yeah, but in some sense, I think it doesn't go entirely against the anti-austerity thing, although, actually, I'm probably being too generous. It does go against the austerity agenda, because if these charities have to exist, it definitely suggests that the public sector is not doing enough. Mm-hmm. And given, like, some of the things that are happening to these kids, you got, like, kids being beaten, and probably worse as well, those are things that the state should be sorting out. Mm. I mean, I don't feel like I'm a rampant socialist, and, you know, I feel that's a very middle-of-the-road opinion, right?
I can confirm that Jimmy is definitely not a rampant socialist.
But, you know, it seems that... I don't know. I don't think it will necessarily cause them very many problems, although there's definitely a lot of powerful people like lawyers and so on asking questions, but whether that actually leads to any meaningful change, I don't know. It's a very visceral event, this, and I think the actual collapse of Kids Company, I think the effects of it will probably peter out quite quickly, although a lot of people have said there's going to be other big collapses similar to this in future. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Fun times, can't wait. What are your opinions of the Batman Gelich controversy and Kids Company? Do you think that this shows a failure of Cameron and his big society? Do you think that this is a argument against austerity, as Jimmy said? Let us know on Twitter at @rightdishonor.
And rightdishonorable.com as well.
And rightdishonorable.com as well. Good.
And youtube.com/rightdishonorable.
Nothing's going up on there, Jimmy. Shut up.
Right.
Right, anyway, yeah, what are we talking about?
What are we... Oh, yeah.
Nagasaki, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. So it is... Today is the 70. We're recording this on Sunday, but this probably won't be released till Tuesday. So 2 days ago...
Tuesday?
I'm a busy man.
No, you're not.
Horrendous allegations. I'm right, terrible. So, on Sunday, it is the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Nagasaki. 3 days ago, on the Thursday, it was the... Or was it Friday? It was the...
Friday, it was the 70th anniversary of Hiroshima. So,
I
Hiroshima...
I think it was probably Thursday, but I could be wrong about that.
Hiroshima was the first use of a nuclear weapon on a... It was, like, in war or on a, on any kind of population.
And Nagasaki was the,
and Nagasaki the last one. Was the last one. So, we had...
So far.
So, so far. So, we've had a full 3 days of, like, nuclear usage in the military. I reckon that's quite good in terms of, like, the brevity of it. Not that we use nuclear weapons, but, like, Hiroshima is the kind of go-to... That's the city that had the bomb dropped on it. And Nagasaki is kind of, like, usually quite forgotten, but also was the most powerful bomb out of the two and flattened, like, a quarter of the city.
So aside from remembering what happened at the time and obviously brought World War II to an end, it's actually quite an interesting time in sort of Japanese politics in terms of foreign policy and in terms of their war stature or their defensive stature, because Shinzo Abe, who's the prime minister, has been increasingly moving the country to a more aggressive position. Japan has had...
aggressive... Well,
I would let me fill in the background then you can contest this. But Japan has had a pacifist constitution since the end of World War II, where the Americans came in and reformed the country to a massive extent. And recently, because of the tensions with China over various territories in the East China Sea and the South China Sea as well, Japan's Prime Minister Abe has been... It's been said that he's planning on changing the constitution so that Japan is no longer as pacifist as it formerly has been. Right?
So how I understand is that Abe wants to allow for the Japanese to have an active military for defence and to defend allies.
Yes, so it can join in with military exercises and that sort of thing.
But it cannot declare war. Which is very similar, actually, to what the US kind of like... international war outlook was for the First and the Second World Wars. Still big wars that happened. It carries a lot of kind of like criticism in like East Asia and Southeast Asia and within Japan as well on two fronts. Firstly, within Japan from the pacifist anti nuclear movement that has obviously been very strong. They are a country that have felt that firsthand all of the kind of like appalling repercussions of nuclear warfare. They've had two cities flattened.
Sure.
And then there is from external, from outside of Japan, they have a lot of people who very like vividly remember how Japan acted in the First and the Second World Wars. And they weren't particularly nice. One of the largest massacres ever to occur in the history of mankind happened in Nanking in China, just before the outbreak of World War II in Europe. And Japan was very controversial in terms of how it conducted itself with comfort women. They would basically kidnap a lot of women and use them as... like prostitutes for their troops and all those kinds of stuff across Southeast Asia.
There's still a strong movement in Japan that sort of denies that really happened.
It's not in textbooks. The Japanese people. So as an example, the Nanking massacre for me is particularly salient because I lived in Nanjing for 2 years and I'm very like aware of what happened there. From both perspectives, I was friends with a lot of Japanese people who went to study there, and the Japanese kind of version of events is that 3,000 people died. So the UN recognises that 300,000 people died.
There's a slight discrepancy.
So
there.
Slight discrepancy by like only a couple of decimal places, right?
And a couple of noughts. Right?
Yeah. What's a couple of noughts? And there is also a history of conservative Japanese prime ministers going to war temples that honour the war dead of those who committed war crimes in the Second World War.
And Abe has done
that quite recently and has pissed off not just China, although China is the main vocal opponent to it, but people from Taiwan, from the Koreas, from Southeast Asia.
But aside from the historical perspective and the historical grievances from China and Korea in particular, the other side way of looking at it, which I referred to earlier, is that China appears to be increasingly aggressive in terms of the seas.
Yeah.
The South China Sea, which include the countries at the border, include the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, right? And then the East China Sea is obviously bordered with Taiwan and Japan.
I think the most, and South Korea, obviously, the most salient of those in recent years has been the Senkaku Diaoyutai.
Right.
Which is a...
So those are two different names for the same island.
Yeah, so it's like saying Malvinas Falklands.
Right.
So Senkaku is the Japanese name for it. Diaoyutai is... Actually, Diaoyu is what the mainland Chinese call it, and Diaoyutai is what the Taiwanese call it.
Right.
Because the Taiwanese are also like, we own it too! We think we... It's like,
no one cares.
And then it's actually quite sweet, because Japan and China have, like, gunboats there, and then Taiwan came in and had, like, a water cannon. And they were firing a water cannon at the Japanese, and the Chinese going, like, go away! It was really sweet, and I loved Taiwan, but it wasn't the most convincing show of force that I've ever seen by an international
The thing is,
power.
These islands are basically just rocks.
They are basically just
there's
rocks.
There's, like, fuck all on them, and are a very limited strategic value as
so
well.
So the Chinese name, at least, means, like, fishing point. It's where people used to go to fish, and that's it.
But the other thing that China's been doing in the South China Sea is actually building islands, basically. So actually getting sand on boats and then actually building up these, like, little rocks and then building airstrips on them and, you know, positioning military aircraft there. And
although,
sort of
as somebody who used to live in China, I don't know what you're talking about.
Obviously,
But that's all Japanese
propaganda. I guess my question is, do you feel that Japan's, should we say, heightened security posture, to use the technical jargon, is that a reasonable thing given some of the things that China's been doing recently?
So I think that this is particularly different at the moment because of the fact that the US is probably less likely to come to Japan's aid if there were to be a war between Japan and China. And I think that is probably the biggest change in terms of, like, the geopolitical landscape, as opposed to China being, like, posturing itself.
So why do you think the US is less likely to come to Japan?
Because China owns all of the US's debt. The US is now so linked with the mainland Chinese and is arguably a much stronger ally of China than kind of like other more traditional allies like Japan and South Korea and
Taiwan.
But
it's certainly in American interest to keep China kind of contained and make sure that they're not exerting overmuch influence on other countries.
True, but it also, all-out war with the two global superpowers is going to be avoided at all costs. And if that means Japan losing a couple of rocks in the middle of the East China Sea, US is probably not going to bother with that. What is really interesting, though, is the fact that there is, like, no appetite for this within Japan, apart from, like, the conservatives.
You mean there's no appetite for...
For there to be more, kind of, like, military intervention, or at least that's how I understand it, anyway. The Japanese people...
So
that
is
I
it
know.
Purely an Abe-led thing, or, like, an internal... I'm not sure
it's,
which party he's part of.
So it's older Japanese, and he's part of the equivalent of the Conservative Party.
But they're called the Liberal Democrats.
Something like that,
Confusingly.
Other countries, ugh. Different names for things. Oh, God, it's terrible. They also... Do you know what they call their parliament?
No.
The Diet. God knows why. I don't know why, but it's a great name for a thing.
Because it just means the parliament.
Yeah. No. It's a different name for. I can't remember. I don't think that Abe is going to be able to get away with it. I don't think that there is enough appetite for that, and the anti-war kind of movement within Japan is incredibly strong, especially amongst the young, and. It would be really interesting to see him kind of force this through. And it was awkward at the ceremonies in Nagasaki that did the 70 years remembrance. There were, like, people who have had their skin burned off from the nuclear blast who turned to Abe and said, don't, like, turn us back into a warring nation. And that was, like, incredibly powerful and got a huge kind of, like, response in the Japanese.
But actually, since the Second World War, there has obviously been attempts to have fewer nations having nuclear weapons, but I think we actually have more nations have nuclear weapons than ever
More
before.
Nations, but there's fewer nuclear weapons.
Right, but presumably the nuclear weapons in and of themselves are more powerful as well, so...
Oh, that is an argument one could make. I don't think so, actually. I don't know.
So how many countries have nuclear? There's obviously US, UK, France, India...
Pakistan.
Does China have nuclear weapons?
China, yeah.
So, I mean...
I think it's five or six.
A lot of people, we sort of referred to this very early on in the segment, but there are people who think that Nagasaki is probably not the last time that a nuclear weapon will be used. Do you think that's true?
I mean, as long as we have them, probably not.
Hmm.
I mean, like, they're used as a deterrent, fine, but there are I think that particularly the most scary part of nuclear weapons at the moment is not, as many people think, North Korea and China, but it's India and Pakistan. All they need is to have, like, an escalation to some extent where some idiot presses a button, which it gets really close to that, like, all the time. I think that if nuclear weapons start being used or are used again, it will probably be between those two powers rather than the North Korea China example.
But obviously the US have just struck a deal with Iran to actually delay or offset their potential acquisition of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Do you think in the long term that Iran won't ever have nuclear weapons, or do you think at some point they'll get a hold of them?
Well, this was the thing. They actually don't technically want nuclear weapons, do they?
Well, they say.
That's what they say, but...
But if you were enemies with the US and the US have nuclear weapons, wouldn't you want to have nuclear weapons too?
Yes, but I feel like there's never been any evidence that they are trying to create nuclear weapons. Like, there's the fear, there's this inherent fear that they are because they want to create a nuclear energy program.
The former president or prime minister say that they want
to... Ahmadinejad?
Yes.
Yeah, but he was a nutter.
So there are political forces within Iran that do want nuclear weapons, though.
Yes, of course. But those aren't the people who are in power at the moment, and I don't think that it is what the Iran as a nation is looking for either. But like Ahmadinejad was a particularly dark period in Iranian international policy because he was a psycho. And now we have I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either. That's poor. He's looking it up on Wikipedia.
Iran Prez.
The Prez.
The Prez. Oh, Rouhani. So President Rouhani is very much like seen as more of a pro-conversation, at least, pro-international president.
Mm.
So I feel like that is... like positive, and I feel like this kind of a deal that allows for them to do what they want with nuclear capability in terms of energy, and keeps tabs on them in terms of whether they're going to be developing nuclear weapons, is sensible.
Are you actually for nuclear disarmament, though? I've never asked you about this.
I am evolving on the issue.
So you're unsure?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I think that what we are doing at the moment in terms of gradually getting rid of our nuclear weapons is a positive.
But there's an interesting argument, which is that as technology evolves, your ability to go from having no nuclear weapons to having nuclear weapons, the time frame becomes shorter and shorter. And therefore, in some ways, if everybody disarms, the world can become a more dangerous place because a single country can say, okay, we're just going to develop these in secret, and suddenly they say, okay, we have nuclear weapons, and nobody else has nuclear weapons.
I think that total disarmament is a lovely idea.
I think with that argument, I'm not entirely sure it is, but, you know, it's obviously quite complicated.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
Do you know?
Do you know?
To ask us, tell us on Twitter.
This is crowdsourcing political knowledge.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think we've probably said everything that needs to be said.
I think so as well. Follow me on Twitter at JazzerJohn.
And follow me on Twitter at JDENichols.com. .com?
Damn. Well, you fucked that up.
I did, but it's not the first thing that I fucked up in this episode.
No, not at all.
That's okay.
I am not going to be here next week because I am running Summer in the City.
So what is Summer in the City, Jazza, for those who don't know?
Summer in the City is the Comic-Con of the YouTube community.
Yeah.
How long in London.
How long have you been doing that for?
Like 7 years.
Is it 7 years too long?
It's really long time. No, it's great. I'm gonna be chairing a couple of panels. Come and say hi.
Are there still tickets, or is it all sold out now?
No, there's still tickets. There's still tickets, but they'd better get on it quick if you're gonna upload this on Tuesday, you lazy fuck.
Some of us have jobs and, you know, other hobbies and.
Jobs.
I'm sorry, how's fun employment going for you?
Fun employment is really busy.
You're not doing it right, mate.
No, clearly.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye, toodaloo. Batman Gelich. Batman Get Rich. Batman Gelich.
What if I just say Batman Get Rich now?
Then I like, fuck it. What's her first name now? I can't remember.
Camilla. Or was it Camilla or Camille?
Camilla. Oh, fuck it, Camilla.
No, I need to know.
It's Camilla. Camilla.
I think I might say Camilla.
I think you did as well, but I kind of ignored it.
Okay. Why did you ignore it?
Don't care.
Are we recording now?
Yeah, of course. We are. I need to get all of this on tape.
On tape for the prosecution.
Camilla Batman Gelich, Batman Get Rich, is... Well, no, let's not do that, because it could be construed as racist.
I don't think that will be construed as racist.
No? Okay, in which case, Camilla Batman Get Rich is... No, I can't do it.